Book critic Maureen Corrigan says it was a good year for the unexpected and the inspiring. Here's her list of the best books of 2005.
2005 was one of those unruly years in fiction, where I was disappointed by some authors whose novels I was eagerly awaiting, like Ian McEwan's Saturday and E.L. Doctorow's The March, and where other novels that I had to nudge myself to open turned out to be the tops. Mary Gateskill is a proponent of the everything is garbage school of writing, but the crucial difference between Gateskill and her cohorts is that she's not zeroing in on ugliness just for shock value. Rather, the literary stroll through slime is her route to the ineffable. Her novel Veronica is a charged story about the deep stupidity of youth that culminates in a measured and very moving moment of redemption. Nicole Krauss's splendid novel, The History of Love, doffs its hat to the great 19th century plot twisters like Dickens and Trollope in its interweaving of storylines across generations and continents. But the prevailing tone of Krauss's novel is up-to-the-minute edgy. Kazuo Ishiguro was the exception to my sense of being disappointed this year by big names in fiction. His odd novel, Never Let Me Go, was very affecting, evoking modern anxiety about scientific hubris and tying it to our most basic fears of extinction. A genre that specializes in investigating extinction is the murder mystery suspense novel, and several were exceptional this year. I really enjoyed Elizabeth Kostova's blockbuster The Historian, which joins The Da Vinci Code in the emerging hidden signs and wonders subgenre of supernatural thriller literature. You may not have heard yet of Elizabeth Ironside. That's the pen name of Catherine Manning, the wife of the current British ambassador to the United States. Lest you might suspect that she's being treated with critical kid gloves because of that connection, let me assure you that Death in the Garden, the first novel of Ironside's to be published in this country, is the real deal. It's a classic English mystery that resurrects the upper crust world of tea and crumpet eaters between the wars, without making us readers feel as though we're strolling through a Disneyland simulacrum. Citizen Vince by Jess Walter is a screwball story about the lengths one ex-con in a witness protection program goes to exercise his right to vote. In its own coarse and very funny way, Citizen Vince is a testament to the American faith in the common man, as well as to the resilient possibilities of the crime novel. Nonfiction standouts this year were light on humor, with the exception of two memoirs, J.R. Moeringer's The Tender Bar, a wry and wisely class-conscious account of the author's boozy coming of age in a neighborhood saloon, and Deborah Larson's The Tulip and the Pope, a look back in longing and dismay at her years spent in a Catholic convent during the early 1960s. In The Year of Magical Thinking, Joan Didion's book about the death of her husband John Gregory Dunne and its aftermath, she observes that books about mourning constitute a literary category overrun with pat self-help tomes. But Didion's own memoir endows that neglected corner of the canon with an unsentimental intelligence. The Woman at the Washington Zoo is a posthumous collection of journalist Marjorie Williams' superb profiles and essays for Vanity Fair and The Washington Post. The collection, which is edited by Williams' husband Timothy Noah, an editor at the online magazine Slate, contains a final section featuring Williams' own fierce reflections on her battle with liver cancer that claimed her life this year at the age of 47. Finally, two astonishing narrative histories came out this year. Adam Hochschild's Bury the Chains chronicles the 18th century citizens' movement to end slavery in the British Empire. More than an illumination of a forgotten episode, it's also an inspired account of the evolution of an emotion, empathy, among the British people. And Doris Kearns Goodwin's long-awaited 900-page doorstopper on Abraham Lincoln and his cabinet, called Team of Rivals, is just intellectually and emotionally stunning. Team of Rivals dramatizes Lincoln's almost superhuman ability to rise above personal insult, to assemble a group of former political competitors around him in his cabinet because, he recognized, the country needed their strengths more than he needed a chorus of yes men. As Hochschild and Goodwin respectively remind us, sometimes commonplace people can travel far beyond the boundaries of their own origins and upbringing. And every so often, a democratic nation can produce an extraordinary leader from the ranks of the ordinary.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University and is the author of Leave Me Alone, I'm Reading. Her list of the best books of 2005 can be found on our website, freshair.npr.org. I'm Terry Gross.